you know, we always make sure that the students are at the center in all the decisions we make, you know, in the student service, well, in, throughout the whole district, obviously, but in the student services office, we always remember, I pride myself in saying, you know, we make our decisions what's best for the student.
Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime, on the internet, in your browser at WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the radio dial, the thing with the knobs or the push buttons, you can preset it to 102.9. That's the number. Here today in the municipal building, the school department side of the building, with Paula Morano. Paula, thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
We've talked about doing this for a while, and it's finally happening.
We have. Thank you. Yes.
It's a very important topic because you lead student services, but within that broad umbrella, which we'll let you explain a little bit, special ed is one of the key pieces.
It is. It's probably the biggest piece of my job is overseeing the special ed services for our students with disabilities.
Yes, definitely. So for those who may recognize you, oh yeah, she's sitting next to the superintendent. And but if they don't know your story, how did you kind of wend your way to end up here?
Sure. So I came to Franklin Public Schools back in 2009 as the speech-language pathologist at Kennedy School. And through that time, I worked, you know, closely with administration and the team chair of the building, which is the team chair is one who oversees the special ed services in the building. And I kind of got the, I guess, the bug for administration. So Joan Toy, who was the principal at the time, encouraged me to go into the LLP program, which is the administrative program. And I always thought, you know what, I do not want to be the director of special ed or director of student services. I don't want anything to do with that ever. So I
Once upon a time.
I know. I was like, no way. Thank you. However, after I received my administrative certification and master's degree in educational leadership, I was like, oh, I'll try to be an assistant principal. Well, that didn't work. It wasn't in the cards at the time. And then I got the tap on the shoulder from Debbie Dixon at the time, who was the director of student services, and said, hey, you interested in coming up and to be assistant director? I said, well, let me see. I don't know. All right, I'll give it a try. And the rest is history.
So from there,
I became interim director once Debbie Dixon retired, and then became director of student services. And then when Lucas Giger became superintendent, he's like, you know what? He's like, I would love to make you the assistant superintendent of student services. And kind of he did a little reorg of his administrative team. And here I am.
Here you are.
Here I am. Yes.
In the challenging role, and that's where we're going to, clearly in the school committee meetings, there's an agenda, there's questions and answers. What I like to do in these is kind of get behind some of the answers, because there may be some other reasons behind some of those answers and explain, because special ed is a complex and rather expensive line item for our budget.
It is. It is absolutely. You know, we have a number, we have over 1,000 students with disabilities on IEPs here in the district.
Over 1,000.
Over
8,000. So 4,300, that works out.
Third, we're about 21% of our students in the district are on, have individualized educational plans, which is just about the state average. The state average right now is about 20%, so we're just slightly over. I think, you know, all of our numbers kind of increased after COVID.
Post-COVID.
Yep. So, what we need to do, what we're obligated to do per the law and the
Mass General Law,
as well as federal IDEA, is to provide a free and appropriate public education. And for some students, that requires specially designed instruction, as well as accommodations and modifications, so that all students can access the general ed curriculum.
And accommodations can vary in terms of whether it's just, you know, a different format, whether paper versus text or something, to, you know, out of district delivery of particular services.
Correct. And it's always based It's always an individualized decision for each student, and it's always based on data and what the student needs. And it can, and like you said, it can vary. It can vary to just accommodations and a few tweaks and modifications to, you know, related services such as speech and OT and PT to, you know, sub-separate classrooms to, like you said, out-of-district placements. And it all depends on, it's all a team decision.
Right. And the team around the IEP, individual ed plan for the student.
Correct.
And the team is certainly the local teacher, principal, you, and somebody else in the department, and it may be other specialists, depending?
Correct. So most of the time, it's the classroom teacher. It is a special educator. It could be related service providers, like we said, which is your speech, OT, PT, occupational therapist. It is typically the building principal who's in charge of special ed services within their building. But most importantly, it's the parent. The parent is part of that team. And obviously, the student is always at the center.
Sure. And from what I understand, the Special Ed Parents Advisory Council, CPAC?
CPAC, yeah.
Is required by the state if we deliver such services, and that's an adjunct or an advocacy group that'll help both the parents but help the district in doing the services?
Absolutely. We are partners. So I meet probably every other month with the CPAC leadership as well, and we talk about, you know, what programming we need. We talk about what they're hearing on the street, what I'm hearing on the street, obviously keeping confidentiality at the forefront. However, just helping each other out and to improve each other's to improve the programming for the students in Franklin.
Right. Yeah, because certainly what some people may hear on the street is not necessarily reality.
Correct.
You know, that little game from maybe our days where, you know, you had to pass the word telephone and thing. By the time it got around, it was like totally different.
Exactly. So sometimes the CPAC, because they like to hold, which I think is phenomenal, they hold parent coffee at mornings or different outings in the afternoons for parents. And, you know, they hear things. And, you know, and even if parents call who might not or who are moving into the district, I'll give them the CPAC, you know, phone numbers and say, hey, contact these people. They can tell you what we have to offer here in Franklin.
Right.
But it is a partnership with the CPAC, for sure.
Yeah. And then one of the key pieces, I think, certainly from at least the more recent budget discussions, but it's really been in effect over time. And I think you're much more prepared in terms of slicing and dicing the data to the extent that what you do in terms of the individualized programs, to the extent you can keep the students in-house versus out of district, brings significant savings to the community.
Absolutely. So we have been lucky over the years. I don't even know, going back to you know, many, many years before I even got into this role as assistant superintendent. If we see that there's a like cohort of students, so like a group of students that really require that same type of programming, and it could be based on their disability, but most importantly on the methodologies that they are able to learn better at. So for example, for students with autism, sometimes ABA methodologies are used, and if they're in a small, separate setting with these ABA methodologies, they tend to make
ABA
is applied behavioral analysis.
Okay. Good.
They tend to make better progress. So what we've done over the years is created what we call our sub-separate programs, and we have over 8 specialized programs in the district. And they're based on different methodologies. They could be language-based methodologies for students with language-based disabilities. As I said, they could be ABA methodologies for students with autism or developmental delays or intellectual delays. They could be therapeutic methodologies for our students with social, emotional, and mental health challenges.
Right.
So there's different methodology we use. And if we see this cohort developing, well, why don't we create this program where we have one teacher, we have a number of paraprofessionals, or as we like to call them ESPs here in this district, who can support the students in the class, in this sub-separate small classroom, which is used typically under 10 students.
Right.
And then support them when they go into the general ed classroom with this with these special skill set and methodologies that they benefit from, and to help them access the curriculum with their neurotypical peers inside the general ed classroom.
Right.
So like I said, we're very lucky to have 8 of these different programs throughout the district. And with the reorg, What's even better...
Now you can combine and leverage the efficiencies and the numbers in the similar spaces much more so than you could across the diverse district that it had.
Exactly. When we had, you know, over 5 elementary schools, there wasn't enough classrooms in each elementary school to have a specialized program. Mm-hmm. So we had to kind of spread them out across the district.
Right.
So kids would have to leave their siblings, leave
local
their neighbors...
Area. To go across
town to another school. Now, with the reorg, we're able to put all but one of the programs within the neighborhood school.
Okay.
We weren't able to do that, unfortunately, with the NEC Partner program. However, we were able to do it with the other programs, which is great.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, and you continually to look at and evaluate, because as you go through at the beginning of the year, you got a plan, you know who's in your realm, mm-hmm. but then things happen during the year. People come in, people come out, et cetera. And then you do a reevaluation as to, well, if this, can we expand this? Can we do this?
Right, right. And, you know, the ability to expand always, unfortunately, depends on space, right?
Correct.
And that's the thing, is we ran out of space before, but mm-hmm. now we're able to provide those programs within their neighborhood schools, which is
right.
fantastic. And as you said, it's a cost savings overall. I mean, if we can keep students in district, like, there, we could significantly save $40,000 to $100,000 per student.
Per student.
By keeping them in district.
Yeah.
Now, there are some students, even if we have them in a sub-separate program in district, they still can't be successful because they really have those significant needs and need something even more specialized. So there are, mm-hmm. we have a number of students, probably around 70 students that are out of district. But we do everything we can to get them back in district.
Right.
And typically, some years we can't bring any students back to district. This year we're already looking at maybe 1 to 2 students that we'll be able to bring mm-hmm. back to district because they've made enough progress in that sub-separate program out of district and are showing that they can come to district into one of our specialized
right.
programs.
Well, and that's one of the other things I think that's a misnomer. Some people may think that once you're tagged with an IEP, you've got an IEP forever, but that's not necessarily the case.
No. In fact, every student is reevaluated every 3 years by mm-hmm. law. So
right.
we have to reevaluate the student, and we have to determine what the student needs at that evaluation period.
Correct.
So they might not need as much pull-out services into mm-hmm. like a learning center or a resource room, and they might be able to access all their services within the gen ed classroom. And we look at the data, we have a team discussion, and determine what is best for that student.
But there are students that, assuming they do progress well enough, then they may be in, call it 2, 3, 4 years, and then they don't need...
Correct. Yeah.
That after.
Absolutely. They might be able to access the curriculum just with some accommodations,
right.
and that's all they need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So while it's a costly side, there's a large number of students, it's a rather, I'd say, safely dynamic.
Correct. Absolutely dynamic. Right. Yep. We have some students that just have speech language pathology services,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. And then we have other students who, you know, have to go out of district to a private school setting.
Right.
So it's the continuum is large.
Right. And you're continuing to not to beat the horse, so to speak. We don't beat horses, especially
no.
in this particular
no.
type environment. We very kindly reevaluate to make sure that if it's economically feasible to do it inside the district, then you can do so. But there are some cases, like if it's only 1 or 2 students, then it just doesn't make sense to do it.
Correct. But right, if we have a big enough cohort and we can see that it's going to be a cost value, we absolutely want to keep them in district because A, they're in their neighborhood schools
right.
with their peers, with their siblings. Also, they're only within 5, not even less than 4 miles radius
mm-hmm.
from 2 school, whereas
sure.
if they go out of district, sometimes it's over an hour commute, even though we're supposed to keep it under an hour. We all know what traffic looks like in this
right.
state.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's over an hour commute. So they're on a van 2 hours a day
right.
to go to school. Already working them, you know, working really hard at school. It's exhausting for some of these kids
right.
then to come have to come
yeah.
home on a van.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we want to keep them in district. It's what's best for the student, but also, yes, what's budgetary.
Yeah.
Good for the budget as well.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. That's one of the, I think, underappreciated things. People and I'll say it as a generality, clearly because of the budget, but because special ed costs have increased over time, and while you're able to maintain some costs, your own internal costs are also increasing because, yay, things happen.
Yes.
Budget renegotiations, things of that sort. And then on the outside, they've got their own cost factors, cost drivers.
Correct. The out-of-district schools, every year, the tuitions at the out-of-district schools increase at least 3%. Right now, it's projected to, I think it's 3.04% for FY27. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, it went up 11%.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise.
And it was, and we, as the special ed directors, we all got together. MASS, the Superintendent Association, got together. We were like, come on, can we do this gradually? We get it. We know that your costs are going up. We know you have to pay your people more. But 11%, it was a huge increase. Right. So luckily, everything's about 3% for next year. But that's just tuition.
Oh, true.
That's not counting transportation costs that are also going up.
Correct.
You know, and that is the problem. I think the other piece, you know, that kind of hits the budget where it's hard with special ed is move-ins. So if we have students that move into town, which this year we had over 30.
Since September?
This was over between June to September.
June to September, 30.
We had 30 students move into district with IEPs.
With IEPs.
17 of those students were required sub-separate programs. So they came into, luckily we had specialized programs, but that just bumped up our numbers and our specialized programs as well.
Yeah.
And those, you can't predict those. You don't know who's going to come across into our doors.
Right.
And obviously, we have to provide them with the supports and services that are outlined in their IEP from their previous district. So they might require one-to-ones. Well, guess what? We have to hire those one-to-ones if we don't have enough staff to do that because it's part of their IEP.
Correct.
And I think that's some other factors that people don't understand. Some students might move in who are in an out-of-district placement that we didn't budget for.
Right.
So that could $80,000 that we didn't budget for. Now, luckily, we have what we call the move-in laws and which district is responsible. But still, it's still unaccounted.
But ultimately required to deliver that fair and appropriate education to the students by law.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's what's right for kids.
Yes.
Right, obviously.
Definitely. So while we focused on special ed, in the student services world, you've got some other things there, right?
I do have some other roles. So student services, you know, it means different things from different districts. Here in Franklin Public Schools, what do I oversee? I oversee, as we said, special education. I also oversee students with 504 plans. So 504 plans are also legal documents for students who have disabilities, except they only need those accommodations. They don't need that specialized instruction.
So they're not quite as is it safe to say they're not quite as extensive, or there may still be?
They're not quite as extensive, so they don't need that specialized instruction. They won't need that special educator to help them. They don't need, you know, they might need a related service counselor or a speech language pathologist or occupational therapist, but they don't need that intensive instruction. But there are students with disabilities that have rights that require, you know, some support.
Mm-hmm.
I also oversee McKinney-Vento, which is our homeless students. So I also help provide supports and services for our homeless students and our homeless families, as well as our students in foster care. So making sure that they get the supports they need. I also am in charge of Title IX, which is so any type of complaints, civil rights complaints or Title IX complaints or investigations that need to be conducted, I oversee that process with the building administrators.
Right.
What else do I oversee? Counseling services throughout our district, nursing services, there's the other piece that I oversee.
Still in that health support role.
Any support to a student that a student requires to be successful in the district.
And then the teaching services are under Dr. Rogers because that's the curriculum-based stuff, and you're augmenting that to the extent that accommodations are required or additional supports are required.
Correct. So Dr. Rogers and the Office of Teaching Learning will oversee general curriculum oversight, but my department will look at what kind of specialized programs do students need. So it could be special curriculum like Wilson or in Gillingham Reading Services. It could be other different types of programs, specialized programs that help the student learn or help the student gain those lagging skills that they have due to their disabilities. So we work in, we team up with the Office of Teaching and Learning to help support our students.
Yeah, because if they're bringing in, I can conceive, if they've got a variation in their curriculum, there may be an impact dominoes that you need to accommodate in terms of the various deliveries.
Absolutely, because many of our students need a modified curriculum. Yes, we want to expose them to that high-quality curriculum like HMH and the math curriculum that every student gets, but sometimes they need some supplemental curriculum as well, or we try not to replace their curriculum, but they might need some supplemental curriculum, or we might have to support those teachers in modifying the general ed curriculum so that the students can access.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're a good domino master.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, there's some days where it gets quite busy.
Quite busy.
But you know, I always, you know, we always make sure that the students are at the center in all the decisions we make, you know, in the student service, well, in throughout the whole district, obviously, but in the student services office, we always remember, I pride myself in saying, you know, we make our decisions what's best for the student. And obviously, looking at the budget and being, but every decision is always the student is at the center.
Right. And at least from a redistricting perspective, now that so-called the dust is settling, and yes, there's still things we need to do as part of implementing that, but it's making it a little bit easier too in terms of delivering what you need, because now you've got more people in less spaces to worry about.
Exactly. And what's nice is we have more experts in each space as well. So, you know, if we need a consultation from the teacher who is in the REACH program, who specializes in, you know, coping strategies or behavior management strategies, we can ask her, hey, can you come look at this kiddo in this room here and give me some...
As opposed to come across town.
Exactly. So really using the expertise within our buildings to help, you know, kind of problem solve how to help students, you know, access their curriculum or what combinations or strategies might work well for a student so that they can stay in their classroom and be successful.
Because the basic teachers, I imagine, imagine somewhat, because I was going to be the world's greatest English teacher at one point in time, way back once upon a time, but you've got some level of curriculum that you need to deliver in some way to 10, 20, 30, 40, depending on what the number is, and you got to figure out a way to do that.
Exactly. And, you know, the kids in front of us today are not the same kids that were in front of us 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and I think that's hard sometimes for people to understand is, you know, when you and I went to school, you know, you had the teacher, and you might have had one paraprofessional that kind of rotated from classroom to classroom.
Not in my day. We didn't.
You might not even have that. And I don't even remember who the paraprofessionals would have been, even in my day.
Right.
But now, I mean, kids just require so much support. They're coming to us with so much so much going on in their lives, so much going on at home, you know, on their computers, on their phones, God forbid the phones, you know, and they're really, our kids are struggling, you know, with socially, and are struggling in some social emotionally with anxiety. Who would have thought that a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old would be anxious? Like, when would we ever thought that would have happened? Yeah. But those kids require that extra support, and it does take more people to provide kids support. Mm-hmm. You know, if we could do it still with one teacher in the classroom, that'd be great. But that's not the kids in front of us anymore.
No. So the classroom itself clearly has changed. So even if it's, quote, a standard, and I use air quotes, you can't see that, but air quotes, in terms of a standard classroom, you still have a student potentially coming in with some additional support to mix in with their peer environment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, a lot of times, we love to have our counselors come in because, you know, it just to provide that whole class support on coping strategies, on, you know, identifying their feelings. Kids can't even identify, you know, some kids have trouble identifying how they're feeling.
Right.
And then they can pick out those coping strategies that help them so they become more self-aware and know how to get themselves regulated so they can be available to learn.
Right.
So.
Yeah, something's happening. I'm going to need to take a deep breath.
Right. Yes, right.
But if they don't recognize that,
they'll swipe the things off the table, you know? And it's just, you know, that's why if you go into our classrooms, you'll see calm spaces, you know, just chill out zones or calm mm-hmm. spaces where there's a nice, you know, soft pillow or beanbag chair with some books that kids can just go and chill. Just like us as adults, sometimes we just need to go for a walk. Well, sometimes the kids need to do that too. Mm-hmm. So we have that available to them.
Yeah.
So that they can stay in the classroom and learn.
Mm-hmm. So I think we've covered within your realm, clearly focused on the special ed. We covered the other services. Is there something else that perhaps the community would need to know to help understand and comprehend? Clearly the numbers are going to change, mm-hmm. whether it's the student numbers coming in, coming out, the budget numbers. Unfortunately, the costs aren't going to be continuing to increase. It's still creates decisions and opportunities and prioritizations. But within that, I think we've provided hopefully some info so that they'll be able to better understand what's
Absolutely.
Going on.
Absolutely. Yep.
But is there something else that you want to leave with them as a takeaway?
I think, you know, the biggest piece, and I think, you know, we just talked about it a little bit, is you know, keeping kids in districts is important, but sometimes those upfront costs are going to be more to mm-hmm. get those programs established.
Sure.
And I think, you know, I think that's just something to be aware of. But down the line, it's going to save us money.
You start getting the economies of scale.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And right. I think just keeping those things in mind and just keeping the thing, I think the other piece is just, you know, we might be asking for more staff,
mm-hmm.
but it's because the needs of the students are more. And if we are able to meet the students' needs within the district, it's going to save us money in the long run.
Right, because if we don't do it inside, it's going to cost us more outside.
Correct.
And then if we do it inside, then there's still a potential that, you know, maybe only it's 1, 2, 3 years, and then they're advancing it at their normal rate,
right.
and they don't need the additional support.
Exactly.
Which then becomes a savings for us as well.
Exactly.
But it's hard to forecast.
But it's hard to forecast that. It is absolutely, you know, but it's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for taking time to do this. I know it's taken us a while to schedule it. We'll put that aside. We did it.
We did it. We got it done. And I think, you know, I think we got the message across. And I look forward to sharing more, you know, in the upcoming school committee meetings, as well as the budget meetings,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, I think it's great to have these conversations. And it's great to understand why we ask for what we ask and our budget is the way it is. It's Yeah. You know, we have, as we'll keep hearing, we have those unfunded mandates that we have to do,
mm-hmm.
but we also have what's right for kids.
True.
So.
Yeah. And it is state law as well as some aspects of federal law
Correct.
That says we don't have a choice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we do what we can. Like, just like the Office of Teaching and Learning looks for grants, we look for grants as well. We do mm-hmm. have some federal grants, the 240 grant, the 262,
right.
that we have access to. And again,
right.
that amount.
That also reminds me. There's been some federal level changes with Title I and some of the other title programs. We have a small percent, respectfully, of federal funds coming to the district, as I understand
Correct.
It. Those are still, at this point, still flowing?
They are still flowing. They are still flowing at this point. So our fingers are crossed.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the Federal Department of Special Ed is closed, we still have it here in Massachusetts, and those funds are still flowing from the
okay.
federal government.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed.
Yes. The winds are somewhat changeable. So.
Yes. yes.
Let's yeah. hope they change in our favor as opposed to against us.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, thank you again for doing this and taking time to do this. And for the listeners, thank you for listening. And certainly if you have questions, your office, I'm sure, is always available to provide answers.
Absolutely. They can either email me personally or give us a call, and I'd be happy to talk on the phone or set up a meeting in person. I always like the face-to-face meetings personally.
Yes,
so.
those are the easiest ways to cover all the nuances, because even on an email thread or, heaven forbid, on the social posts just don't handle that kind of conversation
exactly.
appropriately.
Exactly. If there's questions, I just please reach out.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be happy to have a conversation.
Good. Well, thanks again for doing this. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.